This is the Non Sequitur Show. Season 1, Episode 3. Visionary, Sight on Demand. With special guest and creator of Be My Eyes, Hans-Jorgen Weiberg. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
I'm Steve McRae.
And I'm Kyle Curtis.
Welcome to the Non Sequitur Podcast, brought to you by the Great Debate Community, a group of experts and laypersons who get together to discuss subjects relating to science, theology, and philosophy in real time on air. If you would like to be a part of the Great Debate Community, please visit us at www.greatdebatecommunity.com or go to my channel, Steve McCurry, on YouTube for more information. Next week, we'll be having Pam Whistle, the editor-in-chief of American Atheist, along with our special guest co-host, Thomas Westbrook, or to your YouTubers out there, also known as Holy Kool-Aid. So the first story in my newsfeed this morning that kind of took me aback was a initiative by California leader of the California State Assembly, ENC Calderon, who has put forth a bill to try to make it illegal for a server to serve you a straw in your glass already unless you ask for it prior. In other words, if you have a beverage served to you and it has a one-time use straw in it, it is considered to be against the bill, which can be fines above to $1,000 or 6 months incarceration.
Oh my God! Get out of here!
No, straight up.
Is this from The Onion?
No, this is actually not from The Onion. This is not from The Onion or Rural News Daily Net. This is actually an actual news source, which I had to actually go in and read for myself a few times to see if this was actually what was being put.
Where's this story from?
This one was actually from. I got two sources. One was from USA Today, and the other one's for Fox News. Okay, take that one for what it's.
I thought you said real news sources.
Yeah, you know, we'll use that as a supplementary source, but. The USA Today
Fox News.
The USA Today headline was "Plastic Straws Illegal Unless Requested Under California Bill." Oh, sorry. The USA Today headline was "Plastic Straws Illegal Unless Requested Under California Bill," with up to $1,000 fine attached. Now, when I go to Mr. Calderon,
oh my God,
yeah, straight up, this is the headline. When I go to the California State Assemblyman's Twitter, he kind of has it broken down a little bit more. People are asking him questions on it. He's got about 356 responses so far on his pinned tweet. And his pinned tweet...
Over a straw,
right. His pinned tweet says, I'd like to clarify that AB 1884, Straws Upon Request, which is the House bill, A, is not a ban. B, should it become a law, it will not make it a crime for servers to provide plastic straws. My intention is simply to raise awareness about the detrimental effects of plastic straws in our environment. Now, when I'm reading through some of these responses had, he's kind of made it appear that he never expected the actual bill to have the judicial punishments that the headline reads, right? The $1,000 fine or the 6 months in jail. He's just doing this, it seems, to raise awareness of the impact that single-use straws have on the environment, which to me seems like a complete waste of freaking time and money. You don't use bills statements.
But can you imagine the poor person who has to go to jail for 6 months over a straw?
What was your crime? Oh, I put a straw in a customer's drink.
This is the most ridiculous... I don't even know how to put this into words, how ridiculous this is. They're legislating putting straws on tables or in drinks or whatever. They're legislating straws. That's what it boils down to.
Legislating straws. Yes, exactly. And I guess it's only for dine-in restaurants. Not that it makes a huge significant amount of difference. So the poor $10 an hour worker at Starbucks isn't going to be facing $1,000 fines and 6 months in jail. It's going to be the dine-in restaurants. But that really doesn't really seem to make a difference as far as this narrative that you're going to scare people into raising the awareness of the detrimental effects of plastics on the environment.
How do you enforce this?
What is the person going to say? I didn't request a straw. Pay me my $1,000.
This whoever this is, what did you say his name was?
ENC Calderon, I believe how he pronounce his name.
Screw you, ENC.
Now, I'm not saying this has any effect, but just throw this out there because this is on his Twitter, and I'm not trying to throw this out as a bias against him, but he is the youngest majority leader in the history of the state of California, 57th Assembly District. So maybe he doesn't have a lot of experience. I don't know, but I cannot see anybody looking at this bill as a good idea.
He may be the youngest, but he's also the dumbest.
This is a good idea to try to use a bill to raise awareness on this. I just don't see the need for that and wasting time in how bills are actually done in the House.
The sad part about this entire thing is that it's so stupid it will pass.
Well, even if it does, I don't think the final bill is going to have that provision in it for the $1,000 fine or the 6 months in jail. I think that was something he initially put in, because the way I'm reading this, he's saying that things get revised all the time, and he expects that to be filtered out by the time this actually goes to be voted on, which I don't understand. I mean, why would you put something in there you know is not going to be going through just because you want to raise awareness of something? That's a scare tactic.
Don't underestimate their level of stupid. It'll go through. Actually, it'll probably double by the time that they're done with it.
It'll probably be life imprisonment.
It'll be $10,000 and 15 years in prison. You watch.
Yeah, it'll probably be $20,000 fine and 20 years in jail for having a straw served to you. Or excuse me, serving straw to somebody else.
It's a whole new meaning to the term straw man, that's for sure.
It is definitely a straw man argument here. So I got a second one. This one,
ridiculous.
This one is actually,
nope,
I think,
nope,
dumber.
Nope.
It's dumber.
Nope. Nope.
And it's also
nope,
scary because nope, this one's dangerous. This is nope, why I saved this one for the second one. Because this one you're going to have to, like, you're going to have to sit down on this one, I think. So sit down.
I'm already passed out on the floor.
You get prone because you're going to have to wrap your head around. This is not an Onion story. This is not fake news. This is from Newsweek. So this
it's not from Fox News, right?
I have it validated with this Fox News. Now, do you want me to? Nah.
Okay, so of course.
Yeah. So this headline reads, parents are making their children drink bleach to cure them of autism.
Excuse me 1 second, Steve. Excuse me 1 second. Okay.
I want to make sure you heard it correctly too, so it has that impact. Parents are making their children drink bleach to cure them of autism. This story goes back to a British tabloid story that they were investigating children as young as two being fed bleach in order to quote unquote cure them of autism, before I even say this, you're probably already going to be not surprised by the parents that are doing this. The parents are doing this are part of a controversial U.S. church.
Really?
Yes, yes.
You're kidding me.
No, I know. It's surprising. It's a controversial U.S. church founded by a guy named Jim Humble. Jim Humble, a former Scientologist.
How ironic. Do go on.
And they found that they're promoting this cure for autism on Facebook and other media sources, in addition to curing Parkinson's and other things for children. And they believe that for some reason, administering a chemical called chloride dioxide, that it is something that's called a, quote, miracle mineral solution. They call it MMS. And this is supposed to, by some act of God in chemistry, remove autism from children. I don't even know where to begin, right?
Let me just stop you right there, because I believe, and this is a message to those parents, that bleach is an MMS for their kids. I have a miracle solution for the parents who are doing this. It's called chloroform.
Yeah, it's a disgusting thing. I mean, it's not just the fact that these parents are uneducated. It's the fact that these parents are actually willfully harming their children. Thinking that it's a good idea to give them bleach. I mean, autism.
But do you need to be educated?
They need to be educated on autism because it's a neurodevelopmental disease. It doesn't have anything by which you can just take a tablet or a pill and it just goes away. It's something that happens.
Right, Steve. But do you really need to be educated on the fact that you should not feed your child bleach?
No. Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously these parents do, but I would think that it's something that most parents, as one as myself, I never came to my mind to think, hey, I think it's a good idea to give my child bleach.
These parents should be castrated.
So just to make it clear, though, the chemical that they're giving their children is called chlorine dioxide. It's not exactly what you find in bleach, like Clorox bleach. That's sodium hypochlorite, which is something that you do use for water treatment. I was in the Navy for 6 years. One of the things we use for the potable water supply is sodium hypochlorite, which is it is a bleach. It literally is bleach, but it's very small quantities of it.
On that thought, though, does that article say in what way they think that would cure autism?
Magic.
Like, what's their logic behind bleach curing autism?
Supposedly there was a study done that I think it was in Uganda,
right? Because that's where all good studies come from.
Well, I was only brought to my attention just about an hour or two ago on this, actually, that there was something in Uganda where they were doing studies with children, but they were fake studies. They weren't legit. They basically fabricating information, trying to for some reason, get to this narrative that bleach cures these types of diseases. I don't know why. I would have to investigate more on it. But the takeaway from this is...
But who goes... I've just found this awesome study from Uganda. We have to try this out. Like, in what world?
Well, somebody that came from the Church of Scientology.
I thought Scientologists were supposed to be the celebrities.
Well, I don't think this guy was a celebrity. I think that he was a church leader. The church was called Genesis 2 Church. And like a lot of church leaders that have some nuttery background, he just found this and decided to run with it. The consequences, however, are the fact that they suspect somebody will eventually die from this, and this is a matter of time, in which case that I think that these people should be charged with murder.
Of course somebody will die from drinking bleach. That's I'm not in any way, shape, or form a scientist. I don't have a background in chemistry, but I can pretty much say with confidence that drinking bleach is not a good thing. Drinking bleach should not be attempted.
I have a 4-year degree to know drinking bleach is bad for you.
The bottle says it's not good for you. Like, the bottle has a warning on it not to drink it. Like, how rudimentary do we have to get? Oh, this is why religion is just insane. I mean, it's like Christopher Hitchens said, it poisons everything.
Well, that's what I was telling you, that I didn't think you'd be very surprised to find out that the main person promoting this is a religious person. And again, I'm not down on religion per se as much as you are, but I definitely see detrimental effects all the time when people that take religion and they use it for this type of nuttery. It's far too often.
Oh my God. Okay, well, that's enough headlines, Steve. Waiting in the wings, we have Hans, who developed an amazing app. It's changing lives. It's changing the game, actually, in terms of accessibility with smartphone. You can check us out on the web at www.nonsecshow.com. That's nonsecshow.com. To our Facebook page, that's Facebook.com/nonsecshow, or at nonsecshow on Twitter. And with that, we're going to go to Hans. Hans, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for having me on.
It's our pleasure. If you will, because I'm going to try my best not to butcher your name, but my pronunciation is not very good. Could you please say your full name for me?
Hans-Jürgen Weiberg.
Okay.
But you can call me Hans. That's perfectly okay.
We'll go with Hans.
We're going to go with Hans. Yeah. I can remember Hans.
Well, Hans, you have done, I think, something extraordinary. But not only is it going to change people's lives the more that this technology advances, but it's already changing lives. Will you kind of give us an overview of what Be My Eyes is and what it does?
Be My Eyes is an app. It's a smartphone app, and it basically makes a live video connection between a blind person's smartphone and a random sighted volunteer smartphone. And the purpose is that the blind person can get visual assistance 24/7 and pretty much all over the world. So that's the short version of Be My Eyes.
And what's an example of something that like an average customer question asks? Like, what would be an example of something that they would ask or need help with?
The most use is inside the house, mm-hmm. and I think we have the majority of the calls are from the kitchen, doing some cooking, and also if a blind person gets a letter or wants to adjust the thermostat or make a cup of coffee. In the good old days, when you were making a cup of coffee with a coffee machine, there was one button. It was either on or off. Now you need a master degree to make a cup of coffee.
That's so true.
This is especially difficult if you are also blind and you need to find the right capsule to put in and it's really hard to make a cup of coffee these days.
I can imagine.
So we do a lot of coffee, and we do a lot of air condition adjustments and computer issues and all kinds of product distinction. What do you call it? you want to know what's in this can or this can, or how old is my milk or something like that?
What is the ratio of people who actually are blind and have a smartphone?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but it's when blind people are just as much in need of communication than anybody else.
Of course.
And they want to be a part of the society and so on. And when new things show up, also blind people want to join that.
Of course.
And from the good old Nokia days, there has been some add-on program that you could buy, and it would basically kill your phone. And it costed a lot of money to buy this extra program that would make your good old Nokia some kind of accessible to blind people. But when the iPhone came, and I believe it was from iPhone 3S or 4 or something like that, Apple made a system called VoiceOver. And that was built into the phone. You didn't need to buy anything extra or anything. You could just turn it on. And when you turn on VoiceOver, the phone will start speaking to you. You put your finger on the screen, and the phone will tell you what you hit with your finger. And then there's a whole bunch of gestures
really?
That you can make and navigate around. And this was really a game changer, because it was a built-in thing, off-the-shelf product that you could use as a blind person, and we have never seen that before. It has also always been really costly to buy the extra that makes things accessible to blind people, but now for the first time it was really off-the-shelf product that you could just turn on and use. So blind people has been, of course, the more younger and tech savvy persons among blind people has been really happy about iPhones, and now within the last 2 years Android phones are also coming along, and people are using them as well, and they are cheaper, so it's really a good moment for Be My Eyes to be in this, because a lot of blind and visually impaired people are getting online with their smartphones, and not only with their computers. So
that's incredible, because see, I that was my first question when I saw the write-up about this this app. I thought it was, you know, obviously it's an incredible app, and I think that, like I said, it's going to be a game changer in itself. But the first question that I had was, okay, hold on a minute, the entire, I guess, allure of a smartphone is everything that you can see and and do with the app. So I did not know that. That's, I think, it's incredible.
No, when the iPhone came, I was thinking, gosh, this is not good, because there's only one button,
right?
Where you basically go away from everything.
Now there's no button.
So it was. It was really a great thing that Apple made this VoiceOver system, and I'm not paid by Apple to say this in any way, but Apple has been really focusing on accessibility, and not only for blind people, also for people with hearing aids and all kind of handicaps. They need the credit for that, absolutely.
That's incredible. I actually, and maybe you can clear this up for me, maybe I read it wrong, but it seems like they were making inferences like that somehow Braille could be incorporated as well in.
You can if you have a Braille keyboard, you can connect it to your phone.
Really?
And talk together. I don't know how to do it, but I know that people are using that, and this is really remarkable. It is, yeah.
The tech I think nowadays is becoming just so so advanced. Like, I remember when you brought up Nokia just a second ago, that brings almost kind of nostalgia for me. Yeah. That was the first phone that I got, and it's weird because that was only about 11 years ago that I had this big fat square brick called a Nokia, and it's just advanced so much in 11 years. Can you imagine 11 more years what that would be like?
I hope the old Nokia, they could last the power for a week or something.
Yes, they could.
It's only on some front that we have made progress. So,
now they make great doorstops.
Yeah. Well, just as an aside note, and then we'll move on from Nokia. But I remember a commercial where they actually were testing the strength of it, and you could run over it with a car tire, and it'd be fine.
Oh, they were quite durable. I sold many phones back in the day, and Nokia was very, very durable. In fact, back in the original day, remember the brick phones, the analog?
Oh, yeah.
They were huge.
You don't want to do that with your $1,000 new iPhone 10.
Hey, you know what? I just recently purchased that. When you said it, that's why when you said it's only got one button now, I chimed in with, well, actually, that button's gone now, too.
They removed the one and only button.
Tell us about how you got involved with actually making this app, and what was it that put the idea in your head that this is something that needed to be done? And then where do you go when you have an idea like that for an app? Like, what's the next step for taking it further?
Well, getting the idea was kind of straightforward. I am visually impaired myself, mm-hmm. and I have this eye decision where I will slowly go blind. So I together with my developers, I joke about it. I did joke about that they needed to make this before I needed myself. I still have my central vision, so I can still read the text on my phone and mm-hmm. so on, but I have only like a 5-degree vision, where you have a 180-degree vision, I hope. It's a very small area that I can see, so it is getting me slowly. At some point I was working for the Danish Blind Association as a consultant. I was visiting blind people in their home and visually impaired people and telling them about new devices and how they could learn new stuff and how they could meet other people and so on. So I know a lot of blind people and kind of have a look into the daily life of a lot of blind people. And then, at some point I got myself an iPhone, and I could see that there was something that was picking up among my blind friends and so on. And one of my friends was telling me that he was using Skype when he needed visual assistance. And then he said, but I always have to call someone. And that was kind of that triggered me to get the idea that we needed to make this group of volunteers that you could kind of call. And I'm not a tech guy myself, so I had no clue about what to do with this idea, but it kind of wouldn't go away. So, and then I heard about a event in the other part of Denmark. Denmark is a small country, but so I traveled across the country and attended this startup weekend event. It's kind of a funny event because you can basically walk in from the street, and then you have 1 minute to present an idea.
Oh, wow. Like, start.
And then hopefully some other people in the crowd will join your idea, and then you work on the idea. If you can make a prototype or the concept more clearly over the weekend, and then on Sunday you present the idea for some judges, and we did that. I was lucky to have 7 other people joining my idea.
Wow.
And then yeah, that was great. And then we won the prize for the most innovative idea. This was in 2012. And then after the weekend, we were all fired up and excited. And then we spent 1 year raising the money to actually hire people who could do the coding. And then we managed to raise, what would that be, $300,000, I think. And then we could hire people. Yes, it was. And you can say when we got the money, that was basically day one, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because then you can start to take real decisions and so on, and also see the money go away.
that's the worst part.
because of the decisions that you make. So, and then we spend a little more than a year developing, and that the thing was that now we were in the late part of 2013, and there wasn't many apps doing video conversations, and especially there wasn't many coders that has been trained to develop for blind people. Mm-hmm. So we had to look quite a bit around to find the right people to build the app, and yeah, of course, a lot of testing and testing with real people is something that really hurts because you think you have thought of everything, and then they start asking questions, and what is this button for? What do you mean by that?
Oh, I can imagine.
And
that.
You think that it is crystal clear, and they don't understand what's going on. So, but this is really a learning process. So, yeah. Then after a year, we launched the app in the Danish App Store, only for iPhone. And then in January 2015, we launched all over the world. So that was, yeah, kind of the story about it. So,
how was your reaction to the release, not only in Denmark, but especially when you went worldwide? What was the kind of reception?
Well, we were, it's kind of also a funny thing because we were thinking that it would be kind of difficult to find volunteers. We even made a kind of a gamification element. So when you have been helping someone, you would get some point. And if you sign up to follow us on Facebook, you will also get points and so on. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of encourage people. You could not use the point for anything, but points are good. So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
and, smart. And, yeah. But then we were completely blown away by the reception of the app, and from the we launched on the 15th of January 2015, and within a week we had 10,000, 15,000, 12,000
wow.
So downloads a day. So
a day?
Yeah, a day. Yeah, we had to change the server 3 times the first week because and my people were really stressed about this. So so it
wow.
was completely amazing how people wanted to join, and
that's got
to
make you feel, you know, for me, especially nowadays, I think that's great to hear because you're inundated in the news. It feels like with just bad news after bad news after bad news, and I almost got kind of cold chills there when you said that a day, because that almost makes you your faith in humanity restored again, you know, that
yeah,
people
yeah,
are,
exactly.
are so willing to
And also it's I think part of the reason is that it's a super simple concept. And many people think they have bought this too expensive phone, and finally they can use it for something good. And a lot of people do want to help but it is kind of hard to put into your schedule that you have to go somewhere every Wednesday night and do something and so on. But now with the Be My Eyes, you can just sign up, and then if you are available, you can help, and if you get a call, of course. So it's a super easy and convenient way, and everybody can understand that a blind person will need a pair of eyes once in a while, and so on. So it's an easy concept to understand, and you just have to download an app, and then you can be a good person. So
it's almost like having eyes on demand.
It is, yeah. we sometimes we say that we crowdsource eyesight. So,
well, let me tell you, for somebody who said of himself that he is not tech savvy, you had to become tech savvy very quickly, didn't you?
I have been into some discussions, but it's not really my part to go too deep into the technical details.
Sure.
I am more the person who is keeping an eye on what's going on in the blind community and doing the interviews.
No pun intended, right?
But also not that much anymore, but sometimes I've been reminding my coders that the blind people are blind all the time. They cannot sneak peek. also for most tech people, it's a new world to work with blind people and so on, and that sometimes requires a little introduction. Yeah.
Hans, can you kind of like walk us through a little bit of how somebody becomes a volunteer, how many volunteers you have? And if, for example, if somebody wants to be a part of this and they want to be the person that's on the receiving end of a request for somebody to be their eyes, how does that work? How does somebody become a volunteer? How does it vetted? And how does a person prevent any kind of maliciousness?
It's a super simple app, and all you have to do is and now I'm proud to say that we are both on iOS and Android. So you go into your app store and you search for Be My Eyes, and you download the app, and you put in your first name and second name and your email address, and then you are good to go. So it's a really simple concept, and then there's a video that you can see, and of course you can go into our website and read a little more about how to be a good volunteer and so on.
Are all the volunteers vetted in some ways, or is there a rating system?
No. You see, we have 800 and... I think we have crossed 830,000 volunteers. We are I think we are 7 people right now, so so we have no chance of vetting 800,000 people.
Wow, that's
and
that's
we have 55,000 blind people signed up.
That's incredible.
But it is, yeah. But we do have a rating system, and if someone is doing something they shouldn't do, you can report them, and then we get an email about it, and we will immediately go in and see what's going on, and then if people are doing something wrong, we block them.
Now, there's a special place, I think, in hell for anybody who would, you know, ever attempt to try to do anything malicious. But are there any cases where you have had instances where that has happened, or for the most part,
not a lot, but we have had. I'm super happy to say that we have not had any volunteers making pranks on blind people, but we have had people signing up pretending to be blind and making pranks on the volunteers.
That really
hurts, because you expect to be helping someone who is blind.
Sure.
And then you have some school kid making a prank on you, and then we block them, of course. Yeah,
you have about a ratio of almost 20-1 as far as volunteers to the blind. So basically, a person who's blind, they could call as many times as they want, probably never get the same person 24 hours a day.
And we try to encourage them to use it, but there is a completely natural limit. You don't want to sit and waste people's time with small things. So also blind people are careful and will not disturb people without it's a necessary thing and so on. So, but we encourage people to use it whenever they need it. So because we have so many volunteers, and I get tons of emails from volunteers asking, why don't I get any calls?
That's incredible. That's a good problem that you want to have, though. I mean,
yeah. That's not a bad problem to have.
Yeah, if anything, that you want. You want the volunteers to be asking for something to volunteer for. You know, that's what's the average wait time? Like, let's say I'm a blind person and I need help distinguishing if the expiration date on my milk is expired. Yeah. What's the length of time
different from language to language. In English, which is our biggest language, we have two waiting times, you can say. There's one that is 9.5 seconds from the blind person press the I want help button till a sighted volunteer says, yes, I want to help. We have an average of 9.5 seconds.
Extremely quick.
But then it said, you know, if you make a voice over call or a Skype call, it takes a little time to establish the connection.
Sure.
And that can be like, sometimes it's really fast, only a few seconds, but it could also be like another 10 seconds or something.
That's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
And we can only do this because we have so many great volunteers who want to help. We don't know what people are doing. Some is at work, and some is driving, and some is kissing his wife, and all kinds of things, and they don't want to help. So whenever a blind person wants help, we send out a notification to 10 people at the same time. And then 8 of them are not available, and 2 of them are available, and they will say yes, and then the first of them will get the call, and the second one will get a message saying someone else got the call before you are. Maybe not that tech, but something like that.
Fascinating.
And this is why we can do it so fast, because if we asked them one by one and gave them 20 seconds to answer, then the blind person would give up before.
Right.
We have to do it.
It makes total sense.
The bad thing about this is that sometimes there might be 5 people who want to answer the call. And then, of course, 4 of them will get somehow disappointed. It's not an ideal way to do it, but this is the best way we could come up with.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense to do it that way.
You mentioned earlier about the you had a goal of what you needed as far as funding, and you hit that goal. What about now? I noticed the one thing about it is that it's completely free. How is that sustainable in the long, because obviously you have people who are, you know, maintaining your servers and stuff. How is this app free with all that, or with the service that it provides?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to say one more thing about the volunteers that I am. You see, I'm from Denmark, and we are 5 million people speaking Danish. And I'm super proud to say that now we have 145 different languages where we have more than 50 volunteers, and 50 is the number that we have set that we need 50 volunteers before we can kind of open this language to the blind people. But mm-hmm. as it is today, we can provide help in 145 different languages. And I think this is pretty amazing.
Wow.
Is that based upon way more than I had ever expected. And I'm really proud of this. And one more thing about this is that we don't call our volunteers before 8 o'clock in the morning, and we don't call them after, or we don't send notification after 9 o'clock in the night. But if you are a blind person and you are up at 3 o'clock in the morning, like one of you are, and you need a pair of eyes, and then you just tap the button, and we will find someone in another time zone. And it is always lunch break somewhere in the world.
That's incredible.
And when you have 830,000 volunteers, you can easily find someone in a time zone.
That's
maybe
incredible.
Not if you are from a very small country like Denmark, where most of the Danish-speaking people are living in the same time zone. But if you can add another, if you speak also English or German or Spanish or Portuguese or something like that, if you can add that as your second language, we can, with 100% guarantee, find you a volunteer within 30 seconds, no matter what time of the day it is. So, and this is only because of all our wonderful volunteers that we can do that. So it's really, really amazing.
Yeah.
Back to the tough question about the money. that we have decided that Be My Eyes is a free app. If it is at all possible to keep it that way, we want to keep it that way. The reason is that we want to help people, as I mentioned before, all over the world. And if you are a blind person in parts of Africa or India or South America, you might get some kind of smartphone, and maybe you can get online and so on, but we cannot charge them $10 a month. So we have decided that if it is possible, in order to help as many people as we can, it's a free app. It still leaves us with the bills. We are developing a new set of a new service, you can say. If you are a blind person and you go online on your computer, most websites are not accessible, and there's a lot of pictures and boxes where you have to put in some information and so on, and if the website is not made the right way, the screen reader will only say button, and then the blind person has no idea what to do with that button. If the buttons are not labeled, so we are making this system where you can have one of our volunteers looking at the same screen, and then the volunteer
nice.
Say, "Oh, this button is called, or here is some thing you can buy, or and this is this shirt is red, or and the next one is black, and so on, and what size you need, and then." And you have to press there and so on. We hope that we can make the website owners pay Be My Eyes a small monthly fee for us to make all our volunteers help them service their blind customers. And maybe in the U.S. you have some regulation that makes it's the law that say that the website should be accessible and so on. But if you are in other parts of the world, in other countries, there might not be any regulation whatsoever. And I'm still waiting for websites in Denmark to be accessible. And I think we are one of the most regulated countries in the world. So it's not something that is coming anytime soon, that websites will be accessible in the right way to blind people. So we have to make this kind of a hack to make the world accessible, the online world accessible to blind people. And we hope to make that into a way of making money for the service.
Really quick, going back to the languages, when somebody calls and they get a volunteer that speaks their native language? Is that all determined just by the factory settings of the phone? So if somebody has a setting on the phone, it's in English, or if it's set it for Spanish, it's automatically going to get a volunteer that speaks that language? Is that how it
comes? When you sign up, the app will go in and see what language have you chosen for your to set up your phone. And then that will be the first suggestion that we give you. But I think we have 180 something language you can choose between. So even if you have set up your phone to English, but you really speak Spanish or something like that, you can just choose Spanish, and then we will connect you. We have a primary language and a secondary language, we first try to find someone speaking your primary language, so we connect two speaking their native language. And if that's not possible, we try to find a native speaking in your secondary language. So we try to get the best possible language connection. But you can also add a number of secondary languages, but we take them from the top.
It sounds like you have you guys have just blown it out of the park in terms of doing everything right. You know, because like you said, there are probably untold amounts of things that people will find to ask questions about. Like just a minute ago with the time cutoffs, and you don't have people that call you any earlier than 8 o'clock. That never entered my mind, but that's something that I think is a really good selling point. You know what I mean? Like that people aren't going to be getting you up at 5 o'clock in the morning to ask you these kind of questions.
We don't want to wake up people at 3 o'clock or something.
No one wants to get up at 3 o'clock.
Except us. As we're at night right now.
I'm sure the initial explosion in terms of reaction, when I just Google Be My Eyes, you have some of the biggest media outlets raving about this. I mean, NPR, BBC, The Huffington Post, The Guardian, TED Talks. Mm-hmm. What was that kind of reception like? Because that's a whole other animal. You know what I mean? Like,
it is, yeah.
Are you rock star status yet?
No, I'm not. But it's... it's kind of a... I am really... You see, we are now in mid-January 2018, so we have been in the air for 3 years, and there is not a single week that I don't have an interview. And this Excellent. Is a three-year-old news story, the same media is coming back and asking, can we have another story, and so on. And I'm really amazed that this rather simple idea is so interesting that even here 3 years later I'm getting called. but it is a easy to understand and nice story, and people can easily see themselves taking part of this. So and it's in that sense it's a wonderful thing. And as you can hear, I'm getting more and more used to to doing these interviews, and so but I enjoy it a lot because it's my favorite topic to speak about.
It's a human story.
Absolutely. I was going to say the same thing, Steve.
Yeah, it's a human story. It's personable. And the whole thing about the product, the app, is it fills a niche, important mm-hmm. niche that people can actually use. So there's a benefit from the application.
Mm-hmm. But also, I remember when we were 3-4 weeks after the launch, and I was doing 3 or 4 or 5 interviews a day. And I was my computer broke down, and I was went into the store to get a new one, and I was kind of in a hurry. And then I was just before it was my turn to pay, my phone rang, and I took it. I could see it was a number from England, and then it was BBC calling. And then I heard myself saying, "Can you call me back in an hour?
I'll get back to you. Call my people. And we'll do lunch."
I was,
that's amazing.
I was when I hang up. You didn't do that. So luckily enough, they did call back. So just to say that you get kind of used to it,
you did your TED talk. You did your TED talk. Was that the first time you've been up front of a large audience?
And I was pretty scared about that.
Yeah, you did excellent. I enjoyed I thought it was a great TED talk. I could tell that was probably one of your first times you've ever been in front of a live audience, though.
Yeah, also speaking to a lot of people in English so that was interesting.
It was a great talk.
It was rather stressful.
No, you did wonderful. I thought it was very entertaining and enjoyable and informative.
I used to be a chef. That was my former job, and I remember the chef that trained me almost on a daily basis always said one thing: simple is always best. And when you said that a second ago, that it hits because it's so simple. That when you try to overcomplicate things, it can push people off, or it's too much to involve. But you're right in the fact that this is so simple, and I think it's an instinctual thing to want to help other people.
And this is you can do it in a super super convenient and easy way. You can lie on your couch at home and do something good. That's not that often you can do that.
It's incredible.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah. So
what you've done is incredible. I mean, it can't be said enough. I don't think I'm blown away by what you've done here. I think the entire concept of the app, like Steve was saying, fills a vital need, and you have done something very special here, and you should be congratulated big time on this. Big time.
Thank you. And what really what I find interesting about my story and my journey with this is that now I'm 54 years old, if a non-tech 54-year-old almost blind person can do this, then I think a lot of young smart people can do other things that are even more impressive, and so on. So and the fact that I'm really amazed by the times that we live in these days, as I said, a non-tech guy from Denmark can make something that spreads all over the world, is so amazing. So even if you are targeting a very very small group, if you have the whole world to play with, then you can make a business out of a very very small segment of the world, and this is really this is really amazing and inspiring for other people as well. So
that's the word right there. I mean, that is the word, inspiring. You
inspirational.
Absolutely. This is a fantastic story. I mean, I don't see how anyone cannot get behind this. And a question that I have real quick. Let's say that there are someone listening who isn't necessarily the type of volunteer that gets on the phone, but they want to put their volunteering monetarily. Are you guys still raising money? Do you have a way that people can donate to help
We started out as a non-profit, but we did find it difficult to raise additional money after the first $300,000. Mm-hmm. And then we had to look at the whole process and so on, and we were thinking about how can we do this long term without having to raise money all the time. And then we decided to, and we spoke to some people about it, and they said, I think you have to go for-profit and get some investors in and make a real business plan and make see if you can make a sustainable business plan. And that's what we did. So we shifted from non-profit to for-profit, and we got some investors in. So we don't really take donations like we did before. Mm-hmm. But if you have a million or two that you don't know what to do with,
it's like everybody does. Yeah. We all got a million or two just laying around. We might as well.
Well said.
If I did, I would. I would be more than happy to.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
It's all yours.
But I would put it this way. We do have a business plan that we are super proud about, and it is looking really good. And so if you are an investor and you are into impact investment, we would love to talk to you and send you the information and give you some more in-depth insight into our plans and so on.
And how would they get that information to you if they were interested?
Just go to our website and send my CEO an email. He will be you can send it to me, but I will just he is the one doing the money talking. Sure. and so on. I have a CEO who is doing that, and then I'm doing all the talking. So.
Well, Hans, we cannot thank you enough for coming on and discussing this. I think what you're doing is absolutely incredible, and we wish you all the luck in the world. And any advancements and updates, we would love to have you come back on and fill us in and further spread the word about this wonderful app.
Absolutely, and we appreciate it immensely.
It has been a great pleasure to be interviewed by you guys, and I'm sorry to kick you out of bed this early, but
no, this is worth it. If I have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, this is at the top of my list for things that I would get up for. Absolutely.
Okay, I'll call you tomorrow morning then.
Well played. Well played. All right, Hans, you take care, and we look forward to next time.
So, thank you so much.
Thank you, Hans.
Bye-bye.
On the next Non-Sequitur show, Unholy, Doubt and Devout, with special guest Pamela Whistle, editor-in-chief of American Atheist magazine, premiering Tuesday, February 6th at 11 a.m. Eastern. For more, please visit www.nonsexshow.com. That's non-s-e-q-show.com. Thanks for listening.